welcome to Revolución, a Hispanic Heritage Month 2022 virtual event. I am your host, Rafael, a.k.a. The Latin Babbler, and our special guest today has been featured in the LA Times, Telemundo, USA Today, The New York Times, and BuzzFeed, many others. She is a psychotherapist, consultant, speaker, and the founder of the internationally recognized Latinx Therapy. Adriana Alejandre, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited because we are going to talk about a topic that I don't think gets enough attention, which is obviously mental health. We're going to go through your story, obviously. But for me, I was really excited to have you on this interview because I was like, okay, we're going to get somebody who can really dig into it, who has a professional license for it. So let's get right to it. I always start the interviews with origin stories, almost like Marvel Comics. We want to find out about you and how it all happened. So I know you were born in San Fernando Valley, or at least in that area. Your parents migrated to the U.S., and I know they had their stories to give you. What, if you're able to share, what was their journey like?
You know, interestingly enough, about their migrating journey specifically, like they've never really shared that with us. And when asking, it's been a difficult topic. So my mom immigrated from Guatemala. I believe both of my parents actually immigrated when they were around 18 years old. My father immigrated from Mexico. So my mom, I think she grew up before coming to the United States. She spent some years, maybe 2 to 3 years in Mexico, and then made it her way here. So that's kind of like as much as I know. I know like their love story in terms of them meeting at a factory where they, I think the factory was like a jewelry making factory. And yeah, they, you know, they came with nothing, with no one. And I know that they lived in a house when they got together with like 20 other families, just in, or maybe it was an apartment actually.
Wow, 20 other families.
Something like that. Yeah. And I think that was common, you know, back then.
Oh, that is crazy. 20. And then you're saying an apartment, not a house.
I believe so. Yeah. I know eventually they moved to a house that also had a lot of families in there as well. But everybody was kind of supporting one another, people that had just immigrated.
Oh, that's crazy. I mean, what about their journey? Because I know you say they had an entrepreneurial drive. A lot of them had to work multiple jobs in order to be able to. Yeah. I mean, what do you feel that's what kind of gives you your drive for like entrepreneurship?
Yeah. So I think even since we were little, I know that they had a troca and a van eventually, and they sold children's clothing out of there. They would go to downtown LA and buy, you know, a lot of clothes and sell children's clothing. And they would go apartment to apartment, just kind of knocking on doors and offering. Eventually they had a puesto at the swap meet. And then when we got kind of old enough, like around 8, they would have us sell outside of grocery stores or on corners of the streets. And at that time for me, like it was a little embarrassing because I was like, you know, bicultural, and like they wanted us to assimilate to the American culture. And so I didn't feel at that time, 8-year-old, 9-year-old me, that was very American, which I'm very ashamed for that mentality, but I was little too. So it was embarrassing because I'd have to say like juguetes, baratos, and really loud to get people's attention. So, you know, it was a lot, but I am grateful for that experience because that is definitely what has motivated me to become an entrepreneur now.
So what made you realize at one point that you wanted to go into mental health?
It was my postpartum depression, actually. So I got pregnant sometime around my first year of college. I'm the first one in the family to go to college, live in the dorms. And so I left. I had my first relationship, and it was not good by any means. And as soon as I was pregnant, I became a single parent, essentially. And so I didn't realize, though, that I was struggling with depression at the time and anxiety and trauma. And all of that really came out when I had my son. And so when I had my son, I was young, and I myself and my family didn't want me to drop out because I was kind of that ticket to getting us out of pobreza, yeah, in a sense. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. they really believed in me, and I believed in myself too. And we didn't want this to be, you know, to define us or to bring us down in any way. So as soon as they accepted, especially my mom accepted the pregnancy, then, you know, they allowed me to live on campus again. We all thought that that was the best thing. I lived 2 hours away from my family. And so eventually my mom would come drop off food sometimes. They worked the graveyard shift, so I know that it was such a sacrifice for them as well. But really, yeah, when I had my child, I struggled with postpartum depression. I didn't want to get out of the room for a long time, and I didn't know what was happening. I just thought it was normal, you know. But I could sense that they were concerned for me. When I went back to UC Santa Barbara the following semester, I started taking courses. Again, I was trying to enter into a major, and I stumbled upon abnormal psychology, and I understood so much at that time. Like, just that course really opened my eyes, and I thought, well, I've failed other majors. Let me go ahead and try for psychology and see what the career options are and see if I could even get in. And I got in. So that's kind of
why
I'm here.
Very cool. Now you have a practice. So, like, you're a licensed trauma therapist, and mm-hmm. you own a bilingual multicultural practice, EMDR and trauma therapy. Mm-hmm. You specialize in adults who struggle with, like, what you mentioned, anxiety, PTSD, trauma, mass shootings, like homicide attempts, violence. Yeah. That's a really strong area. Like, what inspired you to pursue that particular area?
Even when I was in undergrad, I had always known that, like, trauma was just something that I understood, and I wanted to study, and I wanted to help other people heal from it. And I think there's a lot of violence. I know that there's a lot of violence and trauma in my lineage, especially from my Guatemalan side. And so I think some of that is connected to my passion. And so I genuinely believe that it comes from maybe like DNA, like epigenetics, and wanting, maybe my ancestors wanting me to help others. So that's how I conceptualize it. I've always known, but even when I was an intern studying, like accruing my hours to become a therapist, it was validated. Like, this is my area. I understand it. I'm good at it. I can do it. And here I am now with, like, a trauma-informed practice with 8 Latina clinicians.
Man, that's great. And you've done disaster relief. So you've done, like, Hurricane Harvey. You've done the Woolsey fire, the Las Vegas shooting, which to me is still one of the most literally mentally inducing events that have taken place. I mean, that was absolutely devastating for a lot of families, just even the way it happened. And you've provided psychological first aid to survivors in shelters. I come from transitional housing. My kids and I were displaced early on, you know, and I was a single parent, just like you, you know, with my kids going through that process. So what are some of the biggest challenges that you have faced, even when dealing with some of those specific events, and then those who are like survivors in shelters?
I think about the adrenaline that you get in wanting to help and putting yourself out there. And I remember going and being very emotionally available. You have to make sure that you reflect on yourself and you really are genuinely emotionally available, emotionally and physically. But the thing about especially the Hurricane Harvey, when I was deployed out to I believe it's the George Bush Convention Center. I didn't reflect on if I was physically available. They had mentioned that it was going to be somewhere between 9 to 12 hour shifts a day. I think it was just so intense being on your feet and then being exposed to different viruses due to the sewage or due to like having hundreds of people in at the shelter of all sorts of walks of life. And I think that was one of the toughest parts mentally, and not being able to finish my deployment because I ended up getting sick. Because I felt so guilty. I was like, man, I wasted resources. I was here to help and I didn't do good enough for the community. I failed. And I think that was, for me, like, the hardest part on myself.
Why do you feel like you failed, though? I mean, I think during the time that you were there, you probably affected and probably helped out more people than, I mean, the common human being could ever think of probably ever doing. So why would you feel like you kind of failed in that situation?
Naturally, I'm very ambitious and I'm a go-getter. And when I set my mind to something, I can complete it. But this was something that
like a
finisher, couldn't complete.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a virus got me and I was out for 3 weeks, so much that like for a good week and a half to 2 weeks, I couldn't see. I couldn't open my eyes really well. I had vomited on the airplane on the way back. Like I was not well at all for 3 weeks. It was a nasty virus. And that was really the only reason why, I mean, the biggest reason why I couldn't complete this mission that I had set my heart to.
Did you go back or was it just one of those things that once you were done, once you got sick, there was no way to kind of like go back to try to finish it out?
I couldn't go back just because of schedule wise. You know, I was a parent. I had left my son already, not just with my family, but with his stepfather. And so I had allocated just that period of time for my deployment to leave and be absent in that sense, physically from my family and my clients as well. So then to come back and have to be absent from work here at home for another 2 weeks due to my illness, I couldn't go back. And for this mission with Hurricane Harvey, I went in September. So everything was kind of winding down and they were already closing most of the shelters by then.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, look.
Yeah.
She at least you know if she's your therapist, we're not stopping till we get you to where you need to get.
That's so true. Yes, that's true.
She's gonna show up at your door, say, "There's a time, and you're not there. Where are you?" That's crazy, man. That's insane. That's really awesome though, because I know a lot of people. Just the way you know your heart for it is mm-hmm. absolutely amazing. There are a ton of people who talk the talk, but that's walking it. That's definitely walking
it. Yeah, we walk it. Only if it's realistic, of course, because I'm not impulsive. Like I really think about my decisions and what needs to happen now, both emotionally and physically, spiritually, somatically, all of that, in order for me to be able to to go through it.
Okay. Latinx therapy. So you're the founder of Latinx Therapy, the National Directory of Latinx Therapists and Global Bilingual Podcast, which provides education to combat the stigma of mental health on the ground and in the digital spaces. And now we're getting into the gist of it, because we are at a time, and I've always wondered this, why is it so difficult to have a discussion of mental health in the Latino community? Like, why is that such a thing?
Like there's just so much here, but I think it's definitely rooted in, how do I say it? It's rooted in not being able to express your feelings. So the suppression of emotions and how much stigma there is around just being yourself, right? Expressing depression, expressing anxiety, expressing grief. Even grief is a little bit more allowed than the others, but not there's also a certain set period of time, so everything kind of has its standards and is quantified, if you will. But all of that is also rooted in patriarchy and machismo, right? Marianismo. Machismo being the role of men, what is expected to be a man, which is to hold your emotions, unless it's anger or unless it's, you know, being a womanizer, just being dominant. And then the Marianismo is the what is expected of a woman, and that is to self-sacrifice for the sake of keeping the family together, to be as close to the Virgin Mary as possible, right? So there's a religious element in there as well. And so I really think that these cultural beliefs and factors have impacted how we go about life, how we go about our emotions, and what's normal and what's not normal. Emotions are normal. Tears are normal. Crying is normal. But unfortunately, we don't see it that way. And so therefore, we stigmatize mental health and therapy altogether.
Yeah. And I love what you said before, which is it's for like a limited moment. So it's almost like somebody has a short amount of time to kind of get mm-hmm. over it. Yeah. And that's literally how we say it. It's like, okay, come on. It's been a certain amount of time. Just get over it. Like, why, you know, what are you sitting there? And I can see it in some cases if it's a situation that's, you know, for some people is considered a certain way. But for the majority of the people who are probably going through some serious trauma in their life, you know, that's kind of like just telling you, you know, just forget about it, just move on. When in fact, in the back of your mind, it's just never going to go away. Like it's constantly.
And genetically.
Kind of, yeah. So it's just, I don't know. I find it like, what is the biggest obstacles? You've been doing the podcast. You've been dealing with a lot of people just even in the practice. What is the biggest obstacle that you've heard from the community as to why they don't get the mental health? Because I know that access is one. So, you know, if you're immigrants, undocumented immigrants, you know, you're afraid to go to a doctor because of the consequences to that. You know, those are some of that we've mentioned before, but what are some of the other obstacles that you've noticed in the community that have kind of kept people from going to seek mental health?
You touched on a really, really huge one. Access. There's different kinds of access, financial access, language access, right? And then representation wise, like, you know, someone can be of a different background and speak Spanish, but it's just still not the same. There's cultural nuances that have to be understood. So that's a big one. And then as we're touching upon stigma, because if your family stigmatizes therapy and mental health, you being in therapy, you're not going to get support. And therapy is typically 45 to 50 minutes a week, once a week. And so for you to be doing that versus like the 24/7, you know, type of work that you need, we can help you as much as we can in the room, but if you're going back to a dysfunctional or toxic environment, then it's going to be harder for you to heal.
That process takes longer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember going to, with that abnormal psychology class, I went to office hours and that professor suggested that I go to therapy because he saw how like depressed I looked, I guess. And so I went, but I couldn't stay. I stayed for 2 to 3 sessions because I remember just hearing my mom's voice. I got in trouble for being pregnant and I had gone to my best friend's mom for help. And my mom got so mad and she's like, we don't talk about our problems to anyone else. We always solve them within the family. And so I just kept feeling so much guilt in that moment in therapy. It's like, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be talking about this, right? And I know that the airing dirty laundry is also a cultural thing in our families where it's like, we're supposed to just figure it out. We're supposed to rely collectively on la familia in order to move forward. But because of the stigma, no one's allowed to talk about their feelings. So how is that going to work out? It's not.
To who do you think it affects more? Because I know you were talking about, you know, men, we're brought up to hide it. It's almost an embarrassment. You get made fun of if you show any type of emotion that is not, like, as you said, anger or, you know, deep grief. Deep grief is allowed for a certain amount of time. And then, you know, as a man, you're supposed to just kind of move on. But I noticed that just general emotion, you know, for the people who are listening to this interview, just general emotion for whatever reason for men is just like a no-no. You will be torn down by the majority. They will call you baby. They will call you babo, you know, baboso, all kinds of stuff, whatever names you can think of to try to make you feel like you're a wimp for doing this. Who does it affect? Like, based on what you've seen from your demographic, does it affect more women, men, or do you have kind of like an equal playing ground when it comes to that?
It's an equal playing ground, right? Even if we think about the LGBTQ community and non-binary people, like there's also so many issues in the LGBTQ community with receiving support and many disparities, mental health disparities specifically. But, you know, with everybody, I think that there's, you know, some things. Like, we can think of some diagnoses that are reported higher in some than others. But I genuinely believe as a practicing clinician and as a human that it impacts everyone differently and very intensely, pretty equally.
Okay. That makes sense. I asked a question because I'm curious as to like how many women you see going to the office to seek therapy as opposed to the men.
Because I know in terms of like help seeking, the stats do show that there are more women compared to non-binary folks and men that seek treatment. But also another thing, I was a research assistant prior to this career, and I know that in our community, there's a lot of people that go unreported in stats because of documentation status or just because of lack of accessibility, right, to resources. And so I really believe that a lot of these numbers are underreported and should be a lot higher.
I agree. And I think when we touched on, spousal abuse, and we were talking about domestic abuse, that number was ill-reported. So we would go into the numbers, we would see that, you know, one out of every three Latina women was reporting some type of domestic abuse. And then the number of like males was like 28%, even though there was far greater numbers of men who were going through domestic abuse. They just weren't reporting because they were afraid to. So I can see where that would turn out. It's, you know, it's a great discussion. And I would urge anybody who is going to, or is, you know, is going through something, has feelings that they want to turn around and at least discuss it, to go and seek mental help. That is a huge thing that we're trying to advocate here. We want to make sure that you get whatever treatment necessary. If you're in the LA area, Adriana is waiting for you.
Yes,
so are you still in the Valley? Are you still here in Los Angeles, like in the Valley area?
Oh yeah, I'm not leaving. I born and raised and got to stay here. I want to stay here. I love it here. I'll visit other places, but yeah, our practice is here and based in Burbank, but we practice all across California virtually.
Very cool. So I want to talk on the last thing, because 2021, you started a nonprofit. So Therapy Dinero.
Alejandra Foundation. Yeah, it's the Alejandra Foundation, but we have a Therapy Dinero program.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, so that's the program. So the program is Therapy Dinero, the other one's the Alejandra. Okay, that's awesome. So that creates access to therapy services. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to disclose that it's still rolling out from when we're recording. There's been a lot of things that have, kind of paused me in you know, my goals, just personally, there's been a lot of things happening and also career wise. So the intention was to launch it in April of 2022. I'm hoping we can launch it by the end of this year. But essentially what it is the Alejandra Foundation created the Therapy Dinero program in hopes of fundraising all year round and for us to create this therapy fund to provide money, 8 sessions at $100 each session, so that folks that don't have access to therapy or specialized care, so they could be able to afford it and begin their healing journey. And so this is specifically for folks that identify as Latinx and or Hispanic.
Oh, that is very cool. That is right. Is there a, so for instance, will insurance cover that, or is that something that's just private?
It'll be private. So we are paying the clinician from the fund or the foundation's money that we fundraise for folks. So people will have to apply, and then we'll have a committee that reviews the applications and selects the recipients. And depending on how much money we get annually is how much money we'll be able to allocate
out. How many people you can help. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is very cool. Well, you definitely have my support. So whatever is needed on there, let us know, and we will do our best to try to at least help as many people as we can on that side.
Yeah,
that,
it's a nonprofit.
Yeah, I think, look, guys, I mean, first of all, if we have money for Starbucks, you got money to be helping out people. I find it odd that we spend so much money on such odd things, but we can't help our own community out. So before you buy your, caramel macchiato or iced macchiatos, make sure you give it out to the foundation. That would be amazing. All right, let's have a little fun. Let's have a little fun. We're going to turn around and have a little segment called Get to Know. So right before you leave, we're going to try to see, get to know a little bit more about you. These are fast questions, so you got to answer them as fast as possible. 60 seconds are on the clock. And so let's see how you do. Ready? I mean, there's no yes or no answer. It's literally whatever you do.
Okay.
All right. So number one, favorite musician?
Gwen Stefani.
Gwen Stefani, good choice. Interesting choice, too. All right, let's see. Hot or cold coffee?
Neither.
You don't drink coffee?
No. All natural.
Oh, what do you drink? Tea?
No.
You're a tea person?
Water.
Water. Wow. Oh, that's a first. That is a first here. We've never had somebody who says they don't drink coffee. That's a Latino. That's, that is interesting.
No, no coffee.
All right. So let's see. Do you like texting or talking?
Texting.
Texting. You're okay. So you don't, you're like me. I don't really like talking a lot on the phone. All right. So yeah, let's see. Favorite Latino dish?
Burrito.
That's a hard one. A burrito.
Yeah, I like, okay, there I like you go. Burritos. I love them.
All right. If you had to go visit one place in the world, where would it be?
Guatemala. Never been.
Guatemala. You've never been. Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm. So see, that would be like a going home type situation. Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome.
Very I know, much.
Yeah, yep. That's for me lethargic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would mean so much to me.
So why haven't you gone yet?
So that's a little bit of a story, and I'll say it really fast. Growing up, my mom would tell us if we go, someone's going to kill us out there, that it's very, very dangerous. We shouldn't go. And then growing up, seeing so many friends go, I realized it's safe. Like there are, you know, you can hang out
safe
with.
Safe spots.
There's certain people, obviously, or places that you shouldn't follow and go to. It's just like, you know, just kind of common like sense stuff.
I mean, that could happen here.
Yeah,
in LA,
exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So now it's just a matter of timing and money, because my family, instead of it just being my son and I, now it's four of us. So
yeah. Okay. Favorite TV show?
Grey's Anatomy.
Favorite sports team?
Lakers.
But going back to that favorite TV show, that means you've been watching that for a while. Grey's Anatomy has been around forever.
Yeah. I've seen it four times completely.
Wow.
So that's part of my ADHD. And ever since I was little, I've had this where I can just watch things on repeat and it loops. They had to take away when I was a child my tia's wedding video, because I used to just watch it like all the time. It was on a cassette and someone
that
took it.
That is interesting.
So yeah.
How many people know this? It's four times.
My therapist definitely knows it, and my husband.
and now us. So there you go. So we have her. That's insane. And she was going back
exclusive.
After four. It was after four times. There's like 1,000 episodes of this stuff. Like, it's crazy. That is insane. Did you
I know.
Go back
there's
and you
season,
were just like, I'm going to find something that I didn't know before?
This is it. Yeah, there is one season I don't mind skipping completely, but for the most part, yeah, I just love like the intensity of emotions that I can feel and not have it be my drama, you know, like it's their drama.
That's
it's
good.
Staying on screen.
It's like it's staying there. So okay, then I got
yeah. yeah, please.
All right. So if your life was a song title, what would it be?
Right now, man.
That's a tough one.
Woes and hellos.
Woes and hellos.
Something
good.
Like that.
That's a good one. All right. After a long day's work, well, you already said this because you don't drink coffee or anything and you're all natural. So after a long day's work, what is it that you drink? Just water?
Yeah, I have to drink water and I nap.
And a nap? Okay. Water and a nap. I mean, I can get that. The mom, the entrepreneur, therapist. All right.
Yeah,
so here
caregiver.
We go. You were given just one free wish. What are you wishing for?
Oh my gosh, right now that my mom gets her liver, she needs a liver, a transplant. So my wish is that she gets a healthy liver and that her body accepts it, that she doesn't reject it. So sooner rather than later.
That's what the caregiver side is. Mm-hmm. So is she staying with you?
No, she loves her house and I only live 5 minutes away. So yeah. And my office is 4 minutes away from her house. Yeah. So I'm always around.
Well, many prayers from all of us here to make sure that takes place. That's awesome. I, you know, I hope that she's able to get the care that she needs and to get that transplant. So
yes, thank you.
She sounds like she's probably one of the strongest women that we have probably or will ever meet. So
yeah, she is. She is.
All right, so Adriana, if folks wanted to follow you and Latinx Therapy, where would they go?
All right. So you can go to Latinx Therapy or in Spanish, terapiaparalatinos.com. And there is the directory and the podcast, among with other great things that we do. Right now, we have a free digital toolkit on how to have difficult conversations within our community. I'm in a partnership with Breyers. And if you want to learn about my practice, you can go to emdrandtraumatherapy.com. But follow us on all social media channels. We're having fun on TikTok. We're on Instagram. We have a YouTube channel, Facebook, Twitter, Latinx Therapy.
Yeah, guys, if you're trying to figure out all that information she gave, just go to the website. It will be there. You guys can go ahead and follow her from there. We will definitely be pushing that, throughout this entire event. Thank you so much for joining us. This was such a privilege.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
I appreciate it. No, you made this fun because you made this actually a lot simpler to talk about than what it really is. It's such a tough topic. So for me to be able to come in and you know, get the information that we got, a lot of people who are watching get the information that they got, it's going to be amazing. So for those of you guys watching, remember, 30 straight days of representation, of celebration, of interviews, of panels. Be sure to check our mental health panel during this time. Guys, thank you for watching this special interview with Adriana Alejandre, part of our Revolution Hispanic Heritage virtual event brought to you by Todo Wafi. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Todo Wafi and be a part of this 30-day celebration of representation. You can also catch this entire interview on YouTube and online at todowafi.com. I'm Rafael. That is Adriana. And we are out. Desde Nicaragua hasta Costa Rica, con esta canción todo mundo se identifica. Llamen a los chilenos y a los cubanos, llamen a Puerto Rico y a los mexicanos, que ya se armó la rumba. Desde Panamá hasta Ecuador, vámonos a Perú y luego hasta Salvador. Que se escuche Brasil y Argentina. Yo quiero un grito de mi gente latina y levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira noches en fronteras. Levantaré mi bandera.